WCNC Charlotte. This is Flashpoint, where power and politics collide and the tough questions get asked and answered.
Well, thanks for joining us here on Flashpoint. I'm Colin Mayfield. Ben Thompson has the week off. This week, an exclusive interview with the Vice President of these United States. Kamala Harris making her 12th visit to North Carolina since taking office, with a stop at Johnson C. Smith University on Wednesday. The state critical to the Biden-Harris campaign as they look towards November's election. And there's a major focus on the economy, too. Here's our conversation. Jump right in. Talk about your announcement today. On the past few days, including today, you've announced some efforts, right, to stop medical debt from affecting credit scores. Do you worry, though, that this sweeping change might have people or stopping people from paying their medical debt, perhaps?
Oh, no, I don't. I think that it's really important to trust the American people. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the issue of medical debt, it comes about because of a medical emergency, right? I was earlier talking to a North Carolinian who accumulated tens of thousands of dollars in medical debt because she had breast cancer, and then it ended up resulting in other ailments, and then she basically, her doctors do, because she couldn't pay, stopped it. She had other and it was just an awful story of a human experience around something they didn't invite or ask for, right? And what it does in terms of how it weighs on people, and the whole point of it is to say, it's really pretty simple, which is this. Your credit score is supposed to be a measure of whether you are financially responsible. Medical debt comes about mostly because of a medical emergency that no one asks for. So it's only fair that that medical debt could not be on your credit score, and that's what we have done. We're saying credit scores cannot include medical debt, because that's just not right. And everybody knows their credit scores. You got an app, you can learn that, you know that number by heart, right? Right. The credit score will determine whether you can qualify for a lease on an apartment or a home loan or a car loan. And is that right to have somebody who has had a medical emergency not be able to have access to those other things because their credit score is so low due to medical debt?
I heard you say people that credit score like another way.
They do. That's true. So, it's true, especially with all the mobile apps now. I mean, you can just look at it, right?
The economy is one of the voters' top concerns. Obviously, polls out today show inflation is slowing. Yes. Why do you think, though, with recent polling numbers, that potentially the policies maybe aren't resonating with some of the base or some of the Americans here in the United States?
Listen, first of all, I think that we know that it takes time for people to feel the policies. But when I travel our country, and I am traveling all over our country, including this beautiful state, people talk to me about what we've done in terms of capping the cost of insulin at $35 a month and for our seniors, and how it is a game changer for them, how so many of our seniors had to make a decision about whether they could afford to fill their prescription for insulin or fill their refrigerator, and now that is not an issue. What we have done to say Medicare can now negotiate drug prices against the big pharmaceutical companies, and that we can cap annual cost of prescription medication for seniors at $2,000 a year, that's a big deal. What we have done around debt, big deal. What we have done in terms of looking at the whole person and understanding that we need to pay attention to the cost of living, everyday costs, I think this is something that people care about. But it takes time for people to feel it. What we are doing in terms of, we have historic low unemployment. We've created over 15 million new jobs, over 800,000 new manufacturing jobs, including right here in North Carolina. We've created over 450,000 new jobs in North Carolina alone.
We just learned Hamas has responded to the U.S.-backed proposal for a ceasefire in Gaza. They're looking at making some amendments to it. Do you know where negotiations stand today, and are you confident that a ceasefire deal could be reached?
We are working around the clock to get a deal done. And in fact, the Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, is in the region as we speak, working on that. We have got to get a ceasefire. We've got to get those hostages out. And we must stay focused on also the day after and what will bring security and stability to that part of the region, both for Israelis and for the Palestinian people.
Let's jump into Decision 2024. The Democrat hasn't won North Carolina since 2008. What would make this year different?
Well, we are spending the resources and the time here. Listen, the people of North Carolina are just extraordinary people. And I spent a lot of time here because when I think about the work that we are doing around creating access to capital, putting billions of dollars more in access to capital and to small banks, North Carolina, I've been here in Raleigh and Durham talking about that.
Yeah.
And the leaders of these communities know the kind of work we are doing, and they are appreciative. I think about it in terms of Josh Stein, and the last time I was here spent time with him, I believe it was the last time, but in Raleigh,
yeah.
And what we are doing to bring down medical care costs, right? And I think that the people of North Carolina know these are big issues. And when we address them, that it matters, and that that's the kind of leadership they want. They want leaders who see the problems and then go about doing something about it, not leaders who create problems.
Last thing, we'll leave it on a fun note here.
Okay.
Olympics is on our air,
yes,
as you know.
Yes.
You've met a ton of amazing superstars that are about to head over.
It's so exciting.
What inspirational story should Americans look out for that you'd like, I guess?
Well, there's so many. I'm not going to name any one person, but there are so many. But here's the thing. What I love about our Team USA is they really are the best of the best. And, you know, there's so much right now that sadly, you know, there are forces that in some ways are trying to divide us as a country. That at this moment where that is happening is also the year of the Olympics. I do believe that sports is one of those things, especially when we're talking about Team USA, that brings the country together. And I think we need that. I think people want that. And so the idea that we're going to be cheering on these incredible American athletes and they are going to go on to win the gold is something to look forward to, and I think is a source of joy for a lot of people, and that's important.
Thank you.
Thank you
for your time.
Still to come on Flashpoint, it's a busy time for Charlotte's realtors. Next, the massive shift in the market in just the past year. Welcome back to Flashpoint. Charlotte's real estate market remains hot right now, and inventory in our area now at a five-year high. But realtors warn it's a changing market for buyers and sellers. Here's Ben Thompson.
All right, joining us now is David Hoffman with David Hoffman Realty. Thanks for coming on Flashpoint. Nice to see you.
Thank you for having me.
So summer, obviously the hottest time in real estate, no matter the year. I think that's the trend that sort of stays through the years. But what's the current state of the Charlotte real estate market?
Absolutely, Ben. We're in a unique situation right now. It's kind of wonky in the fact that if the home is flawless, it looks gorgeous inside and out, curb appeal, and there's no inventory, no competition in the neighborhood, it's selling fast, it's selling for top dollar, even above market value. But Ben, if the home needs any work whatsoever, or if there's any competition, the buyer has no appetite for sweat equity because rates are so high, and the buyer loves options, and so they do nothing. They just wait for prices to fall.
So far different than it was, say, 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. 2, 3 years ago during the pandemic through 2022, you put a home on the market, no matter how high it was like Oprah to the seller. You get an offer, you get an offer, you get an offer. Didn't matter the condition, didn't matter the value. An 800,000 home was going for double. A 500,000 home was going for 750, 800. People were giving six-figure due diligence. They didn't have to do work, and there was no competition.
Yeah. Far different now. Zillow predicted that this would be Charlotte market would be one of the busiest, hottest real estate markets in the country this year. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes and no. You know, whenever we hear that a market is hot, Charlotte, Nashville, Raleigh, Tampa, there's truth to it. But we have to be sensitive to where the buyers are coming from. And so Charlotte's only as strong as New York and New Jersey. It's only as strong as the Rust Belt and California. So as those markets are to simmer down and cool off, what happens, Ben, is we have less buyers here.
Gotcha.
Because it's such a transient market.
It is. And how are interest rates impacting things?
Last year was tougher than this year with interest rates. Interest rates have still stayed high sixes, low sevens, but the sticker shock has kind of worn off. Last year, Ben, no one was buying anything. the home had to be flawless and had to be priced right. This year, if it's flawless, it could be priced a little bit higher because people are used to the higher rates. But there's still a lot of people that even if they want the home, if they can't afford it, if the payment's too high, if the income to debt ratio doesn't work out, they just can't move. There's also the element of, I want to move, I want to upsize, I want to downsize, I had a child, I got married, I'm moving, but I've got a 2.8% rate.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to a 7% rate. It's like an asset that you're giving away for free.
That's why so many people are staying put.
That's probably the number one reason is that 2.8% rate going to 6.
You don't want to give that up.
I don't want to give that up.
I don't want to give that up. I think I got 2.6 at one point. Like I'm not giving that up.
Yeah, that's like an asset that if you can do an assumable rate, like loan for someone, you could probably get six figures for your 2.6% rate.
Right.
And that's why people aren't moving. It's kind of like giving away a car that's paid free and clear.
So I know it's never as simple as saying a buyer's market or a seller's market, but how would you describe the current market?
Yeah, absolutely. So you said it well. It's not either.
Yeah.
It's a seller's market in, it's all location, 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 right? So if the community has no inventory and you put your house on the market and it's flawless, you need both.
Yeah.
Because even with no competition, if it needs work, you're not good. Then it's still a seller's market. But if the home needs work or if it's in a community where homes are sitting, then you're in a buyer's market. So for buyers that don't mind doing the work after close, making the upgrades, doing it their way, they can get a great deal. Okay. And for the seller who's put a lot of money in, TLC into their house, they can still sell above market value. So we're kind of in both right now. And I think we're moving towards a buyer's market once rates start falling down.
What do you tell folks, customers who come up to you and ask you, how do you describe the inventory out there right now?
Inventory is at a five-year high. 2020, there was nothing because no one was leaving their house with the pandemic. 2021, slightly higher. 2022, a little bit higher. Last year, it started going up, but still rates have kept it low, Ben, because people don't want to move. To your point, you and I don't want to sell with a 2.6, 2.8% rate. But inventory is going up, one, because the sticker shock of high rates is wearing off, but two, some people just have to move. They
put it off long enough.
They put it off long enough, and they can't wait any longer.
I see headlines and stories about people who are buying with cash versus financing. Is that really happening a lot? And how is it affecting things?
It is happening a lot. Last year more than this year, but still this year more than we've ever seen before. It's happening for a couple of reasons. One, when you're paying 7% for a rate, you're thinking, I was only getting 8% of my money. I might as well just not take out a mortgage. Yeah. Or I was only getting 5% of my money. I save money by not taking out a mortgage. The stock market's really high right now, Ben, and so people have pulled their money out of the stock market, and a lot of people have had dry powder for a long time. They're like, you know what? I'll put it into the house. I'll put it into buying the house. I'll put it into the renovations instead of borrowing. Where it's affected the market is they're getting the best deal. So if a buyer has cash and they can close quick and the seller has been seeing their home get stagnant, or maybe the home needs work, the buyer with cash doesn't mind the work because they're not borrowing yet.
Sure.
They can make it their way.
So what do you say to first-time home buyers right now?
If the first-time home buyer can wait, or if they're looking in air with a lot of competition, or if they have the appetite for doing some work after they close, I'm not very handy.
Yeah.
If a first-time home buyer is handy, then go make a lowball offer, but customize the terms that matter most to the seller so you can get the price down to the bottom, because money's not everything. Most people, they want peace of mind. They don't need the money. So if they can do the work after close, Ben, buy now. If they can't, then just wait, because they shouldn't pay a premium. What happens a lot of times is first-time home buyers find the home that looks gorgeous. Yeah. It doesn't need anything. They don't have a large down payment or a lot of reserves, so they buy the home that doesn't need work. And still in this market, that's still a seller's market.
Yeah.
So the buyer needs to either wait until prices come down further, because they will fall further before rates drop. See, we're kind of this chicken or the egg. A lot of people are waiting for rates to fall, but rates won't fall until prices fall.
Sure.
And when prices fall, people are going to want to buy, but that's a sell. But now they're selling at a lower price.
I know real estate's your game, but you also see a lot of apartments still popping up all across the city of Charlotte, unlike really almost any other market. And in some cases, the rent has come down slightly, actually, in the last few months. Do you make the case, or could you make the case, that in some cases it makes more sense for people to rent right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Even though we do a lot on the real estate sales side, it's whatever is best for each person. And when rates come down, it makes more sense than to buy. When interest rates come down, when rental rates come down, you rent. When interest rates come down, you buy.
So where do you see things going? I know beyond summer things change, but the rest of this year specifically.
more of the same. You know, we're going to see inventory pick up as we go into the fall and then winter. We're going to see prices fall as sellers say, I have to move. And then next year, we're going to see rates fall. We're going to see the short-term rate fall as inflation dissipates. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see the long-term rate on mortgages fall as applications go down, supply picks up, and buyers sit on the sidelines. So next year, I see prices lower and more buyers getting off the fence.
Gotcha. All right. David Hoffman with David Hoffman Realty. Thanks for coming on. Very helpful. Nice to see you. Nice
to see you, man.
All right.
Next, our WCNC Charlotte investigation looking at how some real estate agents are misrepresenting key details of listings. Welcome back to Flashpoint. As Charlotte remains one of the hottest housing markets in the country, consider this. Hundreds of people are filing formal complaints every year in North Carolina, accusing real estate agents of misrepresenting critical details of the homes they're trying to sell. And our latest Where's the Money investigation, WCNC Charlotte's Nate Morabito discovered it's not an isolated incident.
Oh, she'll be scared.
Rocky River Plantation.
It's okay.
Has a new neighbor.
This is Tobby.
But if Lenny DeVito,
he's about 4 months old,
had his way, his daughter would now live in his Harrisburg neighborhood too.
She would have been up the street.
The dad and grandpa wanted to buy this nearby house and fix it up so his daughter's family could move in.
It's unfair. I mean...
Instead, he says the actions of the broker who sold the home...
We talked to her and numerous neighbors talked to her and told her the square footage was way off by almost 250 square feet.
Essentially priced him out of the market.
I wasn't going to put a bid on a house that's way overpriced because of the high square footage.
Having spent time inside the house before, DeVito says he knew the selling agent listed the wrong square footage.
I think it was 1756 she put it up for initially.
The home sold to an investment company in July 2023, a firm that renovated and then asked the same real estate agent to relist the property in September, again with the wrong square footage. Angry, DeVito filed a formal complaint with the North Carolina Real Estate Commission.
The public needs to know.
It's all about the public and wanting to protect the public.
Janet Thorin is legal counsel for the state agency in charge of real estate oversight.
It is important that if a broker is going to advertise the square footage, that they be accurate.
She says the state has clear guidelines for square footage. For one, sellers should not rely on tax records because they are often unreliable. Thorin estimates almost half of the 1,900 complaints the NCREC receives in a year are for misrepresentation, and wrong square footage is often high on the list. She says there are different levels of punishment, depending on the facts of the case, whether it's negligent or intentional, and if it's a repeat violation.
If an agent proves to be unreliable or unwilling to improve, then we're going to start looking at harsher sanctions.
In the case of DeVito's complaint,
it's just a shame that the Real Estate Commission won't hold a realtor accountable.
The first time he complained, the agency found no wrongdoing, but he's persistent. After pushing back, the state reopened the case, and earlier this year concluded the broker twice failed to take sufficient steps to verify the accuracy of the listed measurement. The NCREC closed the case without any disciplinary action, but warned her to exercise greater care in future listings.
I think it's a slap on the hands.
Records list the broker as Ellen Christine Thomas of R&E Venture LLC. We gave her the chance to talk with us on camera about this situation. Instead, she emailed us this statement. Thomas told us she believes the market drove the selling price, not the square footage, noting a quick, full price offer followed by three upset bids. She also says she measured the home numerous times and adjusted the listing upon her findings, but ended saying, I accept and adhere to the findings of the commission.
But it's still like 221 square feet over.
DeVito isn't as accepting. He says even when she updated the square footage, she still got it wrong.
Yeah, the house is vacant now. The renter just moved out.
For him, the end result is all the same.
Yeah, it would have been really nice.
His daughter and her family,
they were disappointed,
now live much farther away. Nate Morabito, WCNC Charlotte.
Still to come on Flashpoint, Charlotte city leaders passing a multi-billion dollar budget. Next, why it might cost you more. Welcome back to Flashpoint. This week, Charlotte city leaders approved a property tax hike for the first time in 6 years. It's all part of the city's multi-billion dollar budget. Included is that city workers will now make at least $25 an hour. Also, the city is working to address long 911 wait times by hiring 15 more people. The budget passed 8-3 with mixed reactions.
And I don't care where you live, how rich or poor, everyone needs a sidewalk. Everyone wants infrastructure improvement.
I won't be voting for this budget tonight. It's not the time to raise taxes, and we have to start doing better, choosing our priorities for the future of this great city.
Now with Tark Bukhari, council members Renee Johnson and Ed Driggs also voted against the budget. Driggs voiced concerns about doubling the affordable housing bond to $100 million. The ultimate decision on the bigger housing bond will be up to voters. They'll see it on their ballots in the upcoming election. Well, that's going to do it for Flashpoint. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Colin Mayfield again. Ben Thompson, we'll see you right back here next weekend.